I'm wrestling, do not weep for me. Celebrate what I am. Celebrate what I have been. Celebrate what I represent. And celebrate the many ways I have impacted your life. I will survive this test as I have survived others. I am forever etched into the very fiber of all mankind. The world needs me. Time is on my side. History guarantees me. I am wrestling. Do not wait for me.
What's up, everyone? You're listening to episode number 95 of the T-Roll and Funky Show, brought to you as always by Defense Soap, Defend What You Have Built, and Dahlemer Mats. And Tommy, I am out in California, but I got to watch so much wrestling this weekend. There's this new Flow Sports app, and it shows you every live dual meet. And so I was toggling back between Michigan, Minnesota, Northern Iowa, South Dakota State. It's so fantastic that I get to watch so much more college wrestling now. Do you feel the same way?
I do, and the app, believe it or not, because on the weekends, since I have four kids, I'm never in front of a computer. It allows me to stay more current than usual, and I'm loving it. I'm loving it, man. And I think we got some good topics today that, you know, Ben, candidly speaking, you're usually, you know, more informed. I usually got 80% of the information that you have 100% of. Huh. And today, the topics you sent me, I'm ready. I'm ready to rock.
Yeah, and so to let our fans know, I was watching my app on Sunday, and I thought that I was going to be able to watch the Ohio State-Iowa match on the app, when in fact that was not true. So I didn't get to catch that live. I followed it via Twitter. I just watched the Spencer Lee-Nato match, and then I was able to watch a couple different highlight clips of what was going on. So I feel like I have a pretty good idea, but you'll be able to inform us more. But let's start with...
No, I want to start. I want to start.
Go.
You were just on the Joe Rogan podcast that gets, I want to say, literally over 1 million listeners each episode. And if not, it's several hundred thousand.
It's millions.
Okay. So you just spoke today for 2 hours with Joe Rogan.
Two and a half,
which, you know, I can't believe we do this for 60 minutes. So you're very impressive. Tell us what it's like to go on basically a global social medium, so to speak, and talk to this guy. Take us through the process. I want us to take 5 minutes to do this.
I mean, it was a lot of fun. I listened to his show frequently, so I was very well aware of how it was going to go. And it's, you know, he's kind of like us a little bit. That he's laid back. He doesn't really have an agenda. He doesn't have a plan. It's not like he's got a script written up. We just get in there. We sit down, put our headphones on, sit in front of the mic, and just talk about whatever comes up. And that was kind of how it was. And that, you know, there was a bunch of topics that were my wheelhouse. For a while, he was talking about the moon landing, which I'm not, you know, very knowledgeable at that. So I kind of, you know, wasn't able to comment too much. But besides that, it was talking about MMA, talking about sports psych, all that kind of stuff. So it was a lot of fun. You know, I think me and him have the fairly same mentalities on a lot of topics, and so it's easy to do. I just said the word right too much. My wife was actually commenting on
right.
Yes, my wife was commenting on my overuse of the word like a week ago, and it came out on the podcast. And you know, I think it's probably annoying for some of the listeners, but it's probably even more annoying for me, being the guy who was saying it, and then my wife's listening to the podcast, and I'm listening to it like, geez, can I stop saying that damn word?
I love it.
But yeah, hey, Ben, I think it turned out pretty well.
Let me ask you this.
What's up?
Let me ask you this. I think having Joe Rogan on our podcast is a guy who clearly shows an affinity for the sport when he's calling these UFC fights, but is somewhat of an outsider in the sense that I don't believe he was brought up in a traditional wrestling environment. I think given his background and his ability to speak, that having him on our podcast would be outstanding. Can you pull that off?
I think it's probably highly unlikely that I'd be able to get Joe on the podcast. He's
unlikely.
He's obviously very in demand, and he has his own podcast that gets millions of listeners every single time. So I don't know. I don't really see him coming.
You don't know if you don't ask, man. Squeaky wheel gets the grease. You know that.
Squeaky wheel gets the grease. Yeah, buddy. Well, maybe I'll reach out and I'll see what happens, but I wouldn't be holding my breath on it. That might be a stretch.
Come on, man. Let's pull it off.
Let's get into this Meredith versus Gross match, because, you know, I think you and I were texting about this. I think, man, it was awesome that Flo built it up so big. And I couldn't remember. Someone said Abyss versus Guerrero was the last time there was a 1-1, but obviously that's been a very long time. Fantastic for Seth growing, Gross going up to take on this challenge, and the match was as good as the hype.
Yeah, it was awesome, and the fact that it was in Bumble F, you know what, South Dakota.
I don't even know why you'd say that about South Dakota.
Well, anyways,
bustling metropolis.
That's right. I think the fact that it was covered, that it was basically blowing up the wrestling Twitter sphere, being able to showcase that and highlight that match, it was an outstanding match. Both guys are characters to an extent, which I think is good. And they brought the heat and did a great job. It was awesome for the sport. I sent out a tweet to the tune of, you would only take that match volunteer for that match if you love what you do. Congrats to Seth Gross by going up and initiating some excitement. And Mark Branch from Wyoming responded back and said, yeah, kind of like, I agree, but also Bryce Meredith initiated that. So I'm wondering.
Mark Branch kind of gets salty sometimes on Twitter. Or at least, you know, that's how he comes off. Sometimes Twitter comes off the wrong way. But, yeah, I mean, this listen. Meredith obviously took part in this match, and that's fantastic. But Gross was the one that put it on the line. He went up a weight class. He still weighed in at roughly 133, and
right.
Bumped up a weight class.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if maybe Bryce Meredith was whispering to Bono and Gross and Branch, like, let's make this happen. But nonetheless, it doesn't happen without Seth Gross saying, let's rock and roll. So props to both guys. I didn't want to turn into an adversarial conversation about Bryce Meredith, because I think, you know, just both of them, the way they brought it, the way they talked about each other, the way that they competed against one another, man, that was fun.
It was a lot of fun. And, you know, speaking of the weight difference, obviously there were some really high-level scrambling going on in there, but that last double leg that Meredith powered through, I thought you could see the weight difference there. It was just he just got strong on it, freaking said, I'm going to drive through this thing, and drove through it.
And you usually see that at the end of the match when two guys are, you know, have a weight class apart. You see that like at the end of – you even see that like at the end of a practice, like of a really high-level practice, two guys, same weights, they're going together. Then towards the end of the workout, the bigger guy just kind of starts to kind of just have an edge, as you would expect, and that kind of happened in that match.
Yeah, 100%. But, again, fantastic. I think that and maybe I'm a wrestling addict, but, you know, they were talking about the idea of doing dual meets, especially, you know, because Big Ten is mostly Friday and Sunday.
Yeah.
Doing some of the smaller colleges on other days, so they would get larger crowds. And, you know, I'm in favor of that, because I will watch as much wrestling as Flo wants to put on their app. I will watch it all.
Yeah, I think it's cool. I mean, what Flo is able to do, and I don't want to give them too much props because we do pretty much every episode, but it's just the truth. What they're able to do is just kind of cover wrestling in a way that we're getting more wrestling content into the stream of consciousness for the casual fan, the dedicated fan, and everything in between. And it's just creating a fervor within our own pre-existing community. Everyone's just a lot more excited about wrestling a lot more often. And when that happens, you can't help but, you know, be excited about the growth of the sport, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree. And then, you know, if we want to talk teams on the move, South Dakota State obviously got the win against Wyoming, even with Seth Gross bumping up. And they also got a win against Northern Iowa on Sunday. So I believe they're ranked about top 15 right now. I mean, Chris Bono is doing a, a fantastic job up there in Brookings, South Dakota.
Yeah, no, Bono's doing great. That crowd was great. Bono's quite an animated character. He's kind of taking Brady, your boy up in Wisconsin, Barry Davis' spot for the most colorful animated coach. Geez. It's always those short guys.
What? Why you get pick on the short guys, Tommy?
I'm not picking on them. I'm just saying, you don't see an upper weight
coach.
Not,
heavyweights aren't that high energy. You're right.
Listen, it's always the short lower weight coaches that are getting all cray cray in the corner.
Tommy, did you say cray cray?
I said cray cray.
Oh, you are off the podcast. You graduated.
Hey man, I got a fifth grade daughter. I can't help.
That's the deal. Yeah, I got it. Okay. Fair enough. She's influencing your lingo. I got it.
But it's true though. Don't you think it's mostly like lower weight?
Yes. No, I think you're smaller spot coaches. On. Just like my 100-pound Italian Mastiff didn't get all fired up, but the 20-pound Chihuahua is going nuts.
Who do you think is the most animated coach in college wrestling, the history of the sport?
I mean, the brands are obviously up there.
Yeah, when you get lat dropped to celebrate your guy winning the NCAA title, that's a little bit – that's animated.
Yeah, man, think about that hard. That's kind of a good – that's a good question.
Barry Davis, he's in the top 10. Bono's making his way in there. Who else do we got?
Doug Schwab gets pretty animated usually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got to – so Schwab, when he – I was coaching Mike Basillo in the Big Ten semifinals, and Schwab was coaching Phil Ketty, and Phil Ketty beat Basillo in overtime in quite an outstanding match. And I think Schwab did like a salamander crawl almost to the middle of the mat to celebrate Basillo.
A salamander crawl?
Yeah, like it's like
I'm trying to get a mental picture of this.
It's like an army crawl but sloppy looking. That's what I call a salamander crawl. And he basically did this crazy crawl to the middle of the mat to celebrate the victory. I'll never forget it because I'm on the losing end with my guy. And
you're Schwab pissed. Was just, and you're so
he
pissed.
Was dancing, dude. He was dancing. It was good.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go to another flow issue. Man, we're going to go all flow issues. They announced the final X series, which was, kind of taking off the idea of Prowl, which I believe we discussed Prowl for to a certain extent at some point back. And, you know, with the limited information, because obviously Prowl wasn't putting out any of their own information on what was going on. They were kind of trying to keep everyone in the closet or in the dark on what was happening. So Final X is a transformation of that. It's three series, three events with 20 weight classes, so 10 freestyle women's, 10 men's weight classes, which will determine the world team member for this year.
Yeah, and I got to give some credit to my buddy Zane Schultz, who obviously I've known for years. Now I've got to know him and his family more just because of my company's involvement of Dave Schultz. But when he shared the vision with me, and I don't know if it was his original vision or Mike Novogratz's, but either way, they were a two-man team with also Matt Novogratz. When he shared it with me, and I forget when it was. It was 6 to 8 months ago, I want to say. And I liked all of it, but I didn't really believe that it had staying power unless USA Wrestling endorsed it. And he had told me on no uncertain terms that it was going to be a part of the world team qualification process. And I just couldn't wrap my head around the validity of that happening.
Yeah. And so that was, I'll tell you, because I tried and failed twice doing professional wrestling leagues, if you want to call them that. And, yep. One of the hardest things is making them have meaning. And so when they brought this World Team Trials thing in, it was fantastic. And so that was the hinging point, right? They were right. Pitching that as the ideas. We are going to have the World Team Trials before they actually had the World Team Trials locked up.
Obviously now that the concept by Prowl has dissipated and now it's become a flow USA Wrestling iteration of what was described in Prowl, but the genesis of that idea is still here, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and that, so the thing I like most about it, and I think You know, I think a lot of wrestling fans are saying, well, we don't like that there's so many different weekends. And so I love the setup of it because when we go to that final X, that there's the three weekends, right, which will determine the 20 world team members, we know who the final two are. They can build it up. They can do interviews about that. They can, right? They can. We're never before in the history of wrestling have we known who the final two will be.
That's correct.
And I love it because, if you want to talk about what gets you pumped up for fights or different things, it's like when they put out some of those promo materials, that's what gets you excited for the fights. And they just don't have that with wrestling because it was tournament format, so you never knew who was going to come out of it.
I think that's a little bit one of the reasons of many as to why college wrestling – is exciting. I mean, the entire season is essentially a plot line with a climactic ending that has been covered in the media for quite some time. And then the event itself unfolds over a 3-day span, which is short, but people are so educated on the topics going into the event. I just think it's a great story. Sport gets
even then you don't know who's going to make the finals, right? So you have no build up time to it.
I just think that the sport gets romanticized a little bit, and we're going to do that now at the international level. And I think that with companies like Flow and other companies being able to cover and promote this and write about it, talk about it, do videos about it, and everything in between, we're going to learn that this is the way to go. I really believe that. Don't you?
Absolutely. I mean, what other sport doesn't do it that way?
That's correct.
Everybody does. You know, there's build up to a football game. There's build up to an MMA fight. There's build up to a baseball game, right? You know what competitors will be in that event when you go to the event. Wrestling, you don't know that, and now you do. And so just to tell people how all this goes down, because maybe our listeners haven't read through it. So if you're a returning world medalist, you get to skip all the way to Final X. You don't have to wrestle at the U.S. Open. You don't have to wrestle at the trials. You get to skip all of it, right? If you're a U.S. Open champion in a non-world medalist weight class and you win the U.S. Open, you also get to skip the Final X. So at that point, we'll have one wrestler at each weight class, which will be sitting out. The world team trials will then be in May. The world team trials will determine the opponent, which will wrestle the guy who is sitting out till the Final X thing.
Yep.
Yeah, so
it's a great qualification process. I mean, to your point, I mean, the whole point is to create a build-up, to create storylines, to allow more people to see this stuff in person. They're spreading out the geographic locations. I'm sure they're going to strategically do that, for example.
It's already done.
Yeah. Well, they haven't announced it, though, have they?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they put the weight class. I'm pretty sure. I know Burroughs Green and Thomas Gilman are all in Lincoln, for example, which makes sense. Yeah, I mean, that's how it should be, right? And I think I know Columbus isn't hosting one, so Kyle Snyder doesn't get to be at home. But then I think they have, like, David Taylor was probably 86 kg, so I think he's in State College. I think Zane, who is 65 kg, is in State College. And then the other one's in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, it's gonna be good. Like anything, and this is where I get a little bit frustrated with our wrestling community. Like anything, there's gonna be kinks. But I think that if the right minds and the right people are involved, it'll vet itself. It'll work itself out.
What do you think about the fact that in the past that whoever has that final buy spot has got to sit for the whole day, and the other guy has like four matches by the time they get to him in the same day. Now that advantage is taken away. Because I like that.
I like it too, because there's still an advantage.
Yes.
You're automatically in the finals, yeah. But there's not as much of a physical exhaustion advantage. You just get to skip the stress and strain and the uncertainty and the risk of going through a qualification process. So you still get an advantage. It's just not as tilted, which I think is more fair I didn't dislike the older process, by the way.
I thought it was almost too much. I mean, you know, the perfect example for me was that junior world team trials weight class, where it was a 32-man bracket. And, God, I'm blanking on which the competitor was, but he had 5 matches prior to the final wrestle.
Of course.
So that's like, I mean, and that's obviously on the extreme end, right? But yep. Dang it, I said right. I got to stop. I can't say it anymore, Tommy. So I think that's at the extreme end. But even if you have 4 matches or 3 matches prior to that final series, that's a gigantic advantage for that person. And I like that advantage is taken away. Obviously, that person sitting out does have the benefit of not having to wrestle in either 1 or 2 extra events.
Right. So
you said it.
Yeah, I think it's. I did it too. You're teaching me how to do this, man. I'm not that guy, but you're making me that guy.
I haven't always done it, so I don't know where I picked up the bad habit at.
Yeah, well, we got to get better at it, or otherwise we'll get fired from our, you know, our carrier on the podcast. Hey, man, I think it's good. I wish we disagreed on more things, but
so is there any part of it you dislike?
You know, not really, but I have caught some wind on Twitter. Various athletes have just kind of – like their questions, if I'm reading between the lines correctly, which that's what I do for a living. So, you know, I guess I assume that I am more than I'm not. There's an implication that from some athletes that like they're wondering if they're getting like – shafted on the compensation.
Well,
and,
okay, that's a stretch, Tommy, because in all fairness, when Prowl put this out, they're offering these ridiculously large numbers, but they never executed on it.
Well, so, that's exactly
Tommy,
right.
I can say whatever the F I want. I can say I'm doing a tournament, everyone's getting $1 million, but it doesn't mean it's going to happen.
That's right. I sense that they're holding USA Wrestling and Flow accountable to actually pay what someone said they will pay them.
But did not execute
for whatever reason. I mean, it might have been the plan, but it's not happening. And so the other thing too, Ben, and I think you know this, but like let's do the math on past wrestling events, World Team Trials and USA Wrestling. I mean, what's the average attendance, Ben?
Well, you go the gate, whatever the gate is, total attendance times tickets sold minus the cost, and then you add in whatever the TV revenue is, which I'm sure Flo is paying USA Wrestling something for the coverage of the World Team Trials, but I can't.
Let's just
I can't imagine
let's
it's $1 million a year. Probably not even close to that, right?
In my opinion, because I've done the math in my head before, I've never spread it out on a spreadsheet, but most, if not all, World Team Trials and USA Wrestling events are a loss. All of the when you include the broadcast,
you know what? USA Wrestling has breakdowns of these costs somewhere publicly available, and I am pretty sure it's a loss for them.
Yeah, it's a loss. So when you say or you imply that you should be compensated more than you get on an event that loses money, I just have a hard time as a business person reconciling with that. Now, if you want to charge $5,000 a day because someone's running a wrestling camp where they make $20,000, more power to you. If you want to drive up the market price, for being endorsed by a brand that makes a lot of money, go get it, big boy. That's called free market enterprise. That's capitalism. But it's kind of hard to say I should be paid more on an event that doesn't make money. Now, I think everybody should get their fair share. I really believe that. But you've got to look at the math of these events before those thoughts enter your mind. And I've been in those shoes when I was, you know, training and stuff. But
yes.
Ben, I really believe these events don't yet make money. And if and when they do, these guys deserve to be a part of that. They absolutely deserve it. But it hasn't happened yet. It has not happened. Their market value to compete in front of people, financially speaking, is worth less than their market value to teach a single leg to campers in the summer, than their market value to be endorsed by a brand.
Agreed.
I mean, it's just the truth. I wish it weren't true, but I think it is true right now. And so until we can monetize wrestling professionally and have their performances and what they do be monetized, it's kind of hard to say, well, we got to give them more. I mean, give them more of what? What are we going to give them more of? You know, so
nothing to give more of. There's nothing.
So I hope this works. I hope that Flow Wrestling and USA Wrestling create, you know, millions of subscriptions. There's hundreds of thousands of people paying $10 to watch this streamed on the internet. I hope that there's millions of dollars flowing into these events and they break off a portion of that and pay these guys what they deserve for all the work that they put in. But until that happens, it's hard to do. It's hard to do, right? I mean, so we've just gotta take our time here and figure this out. Are you feeling me or not?
We've discussed this. I agree, 1,000,000%. So in that case, let's go Prowl. I hope it gets a ton of viewers, and like you said, hope it can generate some income for athletes in the future. I know I will click in to watch all three of these events, and
me
I'll be
too,
excited
man. For
you.
Sure. Hey, is this going to be over and above the subscription premium that we pay for Flow?
No.
Or is this inclusive of it?
Inclusive.
Well, that's
outstanding. That's
outstanding. So yeah. If you were a betting man, and we don't know the schematics of Flow Wrestling, but how many more unique Flow Pro subscriptions do you think they'll get? This can never be quantified because you don't know what motivates people.
Yeah.
But just thinking out loud, how many unique Flow Pro subscriptions will they get because this content is available on their service?
Man, I don't know. That's hard for me to quantify because, you know, I obviously saw the value in it years ago. And now it's right. Like, well, now on Sunday there was eight live sporting events on Sunday.
You want to know something crazy? I've only been on Flow Pro for 2 years. I can't believe that it took me that long.
Yeah. But so now if you say, now like this winter I got, 80 extra duels that we didn't get last winter? And then we're going to get the three weekends of World Team. So now we're going to get the U.S. Open. We're going to get the World Team Trials. And we're going to get three more weekends of Final X. I mean, that's shit, yeah. Obviously, it's a great value.
Yeah, of course. It's awesome.
So hopefully that more significant portion of the wrestling community tunes into Flow. And when people complain about the price of Flow, it just makes me – that one really bothers me. But let's get on because I don't want to rant and rave on that. Let's go Ohio State, Iowa. Tommy, you were there in person. I think there's a lot to discuss here. I think there's a lot of interesting matchups. And – I will let you go first. Go ahead, buddy.
Man, I got a lot of mixed emotions. I guess from a macro perspective, 15,100 people at a dual meet in Columbus, Ohio. With, you know, I would say Ohio State is still considered a non-traditional, age-old powerhouse in college wrestling.
They're getting into that where,
right?
Yeah, it's they're getting into that where they're going to be a very regular powerhouse now.
Right. So it's cool to see them solidifying that with a fan base, you know, and I'm from Columbus, went to Ohio State, so obviously that's cool. So, you know, for Ohio State to have 15,000 people to be ranked number one going into the duel and beat the number three team by 10 and have it be considered
a poor performance.
Probably an average to poor performance by the Buckeyes. You know, when I step back and look at it big picture, I couldn't be happier. But with that being said, when I think about what the Buckeyes need to do in the next 2 months to beat Penn State, you know, it was a discouraging day, if that makes any sense.
Tommy, I don't think it makes a lot of sense. I think, honestly, when you look at every matchup by matchup, I think the only one you could be highly disappointed in is Nate over Spencer.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah, and I mean, you're kind of setting me up to dog on my team, which I really didn't plan
that's
to
fine.
Do today.
It's great. It's great to be honest about you.
Right.
The press.
I'm being honest. Everybody knows I love the Buckeyes. I love them, you know, I'm hugely biased. But I will say that, yes, that's the only result that I was surprised by. But some of the performances should have and could have been better if we're going to win the national championship. And that's what got to me a little bit. But I think the coaching staff feels no different. I bet the athletes feel no different. And it was a great day for Buckeye wrestling. NATO was a shock. And
so let's talk about that match. I mean, that's obviously the most interesting one to everybody. I got a chance to watch it on YouTube. Thank you for whoever put that up. That was fantastic. Tommy, we discussed this prior to me watching that, and I would share the same sentiment of what you said. I thought NATO came out too slow. I thought he wasn't aggressive enough. I was shocked that he got ridden because, to my knowledge, he has not been ridden. And in the third period, he kind of turned it up. He got that one takedown, and then he got in on a second deep shot with 1:02 left, and Spencer Lee fought it off the entire time. I mean, it was some very, very, very impressive defense.
Yeah, I would say that I was surprised by NATO's lack of, I don't know. I thought he'd have more swagger going out there because I just think he's the better wrestler at the present time. And so that first period was just patty cake. Both guys, too. I mean, Spencer Lee wasn't doing a damn thing either. And it was
was not a lot of attacking. I want to say in the first period, Spencer Lee took one attempt and NATO took two attempts.
Right. And then Spencer Lee riding NATO out. I think NATO's a great bottom wrestler. He's proven that throughout his entire career. He's taken neutral one time that I can remember in a critical match, and that was in the NCAA semis to Waters, which proved to be the right call.
Waters did turn him at that dual meet that year. So now that was when he was a freshman, but I do believe there was a time when he was ridden.
When's that?
When Waters rode him in the dual meet.
Yes. So, I mean, and for as much as he's wrestled in college wrestling, he's been pretty much been in every event. He's just done a great job on bottom. He's taken down against Lezak, getting out. He's just done a great job on bottom. So I was just surprised with how well Lee rode him. And it was kind of decisive on top.
So I didn't feel that way. You kind of described it as decisive on top. I imagine that, you know, Lee had maybe a bar locked up and NATO was getting his face driven into the ground or maybe he almost got tilted. I don't feel that Spencer Lee was close to turning him once or had one really dominating pinning combination locked up.
Well, yeah, and that's where we get in.
I thought there was three instances where NATO was very close to
no chance of turning him.
But I thought NATO was very close to escape three different times. And, you know, it wasn't the least dominant top performance I've ever seen, but I was kind of expecting a little worse when you had said that. And I think someone else said that also.
Right. Well, either way, it's not good to get ridden out. And he did. And in the third period, it's like Nate realized he had to go. And then he basically, those last 2 minutes was how I expected all 7 minutes to go. And he'd win 6-2 in a somewhat controlling fashion. That was my expectation. So to me, if I were, you know, all things considered, I'm trying to take my rose-colored glasses off. If they were to wrestle that match again, I would still take NATO. I don't know what you would do, but that's who I'm taking.
Yeah, you know, it makes it tougher. So obviously Spencer was never close to a takedown in the match. So obviously he can get away. So, you know, if NATO gets one takedown and Spencer gets two escapes, that makes it 2-2 and we're going to overtime. So then you come into the fact that NATO has to get more than one takedown to win the match, which obviously not impossible. And given the fact that Spencer didn't come close to taking him down, it might happen, but they might also go to double OT and Spencer might get out easy and NATO might get ridden out.
If I'm coaching NATO, or if I am NATO, I'm probably thinking this. I'm going to get a first period takedown because I was dominant on my feet when I made my mind up. I'm going to be up 2-1 or better going into the second period, and I'm going to have plenty of options.
Wait, I think you're misusing the word dominant, right? Because he got one – damn it, I said right. He got one takedown. He got one takedown in 2 minutes. That's not dominant, is it?
Yeah.
You think that's dominant?
from a scoring perspective, it's not at all. But Ben, come on, you're just trying to sensationalize the discussion.
I'm not trying to sensationalize it. He was definitely better on his feet in the third period, but dominant. I mean, damn, the way Spencer Lee defended him for that last minute when he was on the leg attack, that was freaking impressive.
I think that if Nato wrestled that way the whole match, he would have scored 3 takedowns and been fine. So I could
see that happening? Sure, I could see that happening. Could I see Nato getting 1 takedown and Spencer getting 2 escapes and 2-2 going overtime? I could see that happening too.
Well, that's a good point, yeah. But who are you taking next match?
It's tough because I think those circumstances are equally as likely, the one I just outlined.
Hey, Ben.
What?
Do you think?
But I got to pick somebody, right? Gun to my head. I got to pick somebody.
Gun to your head. Who you think?
Give me 10 seconds. 10, 9. I'm going to pick Nato.
I love it.
I'm going to pick Nato. But I'm not picking him 3 takedowns, Tommy. I'm picking him 4-3. He doesn't choose bottom. He gets a takedown. Spencer Lee gets an escape. They choose neutral. He gets another takedown. Spencer Lee gets an escape. And then Spencer Lee chooses down. It's 4-3.
I'm buying that. I actually agree. I think that's what's going to happen in reality. Hey, you think Nato? I think Nato might choose down because they have might choose neutral now because of the 4-point near fall instead of 3.
Oh, for God's sakes. So ridiculous.
Well, they got the 4-pointer now, so I think he's going to go neutral instead of choose down.
Oh, my gosh, Tommy. Don't even start. You're encouraging Willie's behavior. You really are. Okay, so that was a great match. All right, Pletcher. I really expected Pletcher to get bonus. He didn't do it. And then we got McKenna. McKenna went out and got bonus like he was supposed to. That was really good.
I know that he was supposed to do that, but I thought he looked very sound. I was impressed, which is great.
He took an ass whooping from Mike Thorne the week before.
That's exactly what I was trying to say. You took the words right out of my mouth and said it. You said it a little bit more colorfully than I would have, but yes, yeah, I agree.
Did I get you to swear one time on this podcast? I think I did.
Yeah, I've said damn a couple times.
I thought it was maybe the A word or the S word or something. Okay. You know. 49. Now, see, on the other side, 49, I didn't think that one was going to be so close. I expected more of like a 4-6 point win for Sorensen. So when it was only 4-2, I thought that was a good job by Keyshawn.
Yeah, no, he did well. I think, you know, I think he could have even done better if he showed a little bit more belief in himself. But he's a freshman, and you got to get over that if you want to be the man. But I think he did well. It was a respectable result for him and something that he can build off of instead of – I don't think he needs to have his dobber down about that one.
Dobber down. That's the Kentucky mudflap term. What?
You like that?
Yeah, that's good. You must be reading the forums. Okay, so 57. You know, I didn't get to watch anything from this 157 match. Please tell me – I want to say Kemmerer was up by a decent amount, and then Micah might have got a takedown in the third to bring it a lot closer. Is that how it went down?
Kemmerer scored a takedown within the first 6 seconds of the first period and rode him for the entire first. So the first period ended 2-0 with 2 minutes and 52 or 3 seconds.
Oh, my gosh.
And so it was a very, very, very poor start by Micah. He then gave up a takedown, I believe, in the second period right off the bat. So going into the third period, Ben, Kemmerer was up, I want to say, 4-1 with 3 minutes and some odd seconds of riding time.
Okay.
So going into the third period, you're like, oh, my gosh, you know, it's not looking good for Mick Jordan the next time they wrestle. And then the third period, he kind of blew it open. And scored 2 takedowns, wrestled well, had – it wasn't like 2 fluky takedowns.
Micah scored 2 takedowns.
Sorry, yeah, Micah scored 2 takedowns. And more than just the scoring of the 2 takedowns, he was moving them all over the mat. He had him wrestling Jordan's style instead of Jordan wrestling Kemmerer's
So I didn't see that coming. I thought that was pretty impressive for Micah, because usually Kemmerer tries to pour it on late.
Yeah, so it was kind of the other way around. I wouldn't say that Kemmerer broke, because he didn't, but he did lose some steam, and Jordan gained some confidence. So, I mean, it was two takedowns and two takedowns. So on one hand, I could say, man, that was a war. On the other hand, I still think there was 3 minutes of riding time. And so, you know, you still got to give Kemmerer the upper hand if they were to wrestle again. But there's enough that happened there that's like, you know, Mick, if you can get out from the bottom or build a lead so that you don't have to choose bottom going into these matches, you know, he's got a shot, but I'd still probably give Kemmerer the upper hand going to the next bout. But I thought that there was enough at the end to have something to work for.
Yeah, and so that was positive for Mike. Obviously, the first two periods were very negative. But yep. I think that gives him a chance for the next one, which if you said to me 10 matches, Micah versus Kemmerer, I'm saying I would have said Kemmerer wins 9-1. Now I'm rethinking. I might be making those odds a little bit closer.
I would say after watching that, it's 7-3, 6-4 and climbing.
Yeah. Okay, so let's go. Keyshawn Campbell, Alex Marinelli, another one I did not get to see any of, but it was really close, right?
It was close. Campbell wasn't ready for Marinelli's pressure or didn't want to be ready for his pressure. Marinelli actually was controlling the match through the first 4 or 5 minutes, and then Campbell kind of turned the corner, rode Marinelli hard, which really kind of neutralized the momentum that Marinelli had built in the first period. And then, you know, there's a minute and a half to go. Campbell's got to get out and score a takedown, and he could win or at least tie the match. And he just couldn't separate himself, couldn't really step up and rise to that challenge. So Marinelli came out on top. Pretty good match. I can see it going the other way. But I'd say you wrestle that match 10 times, I'd give Marinelli 6. Okay. You know what I mean?
And then so Bojo, Miles win pretty easy. Colin Moore wins pretty easy. And
I want to stop. I want to stop on what? Colin Moore. Colin Moore, he did great last year. Big Ten champ, got okay. Third in the country. He only lost a few times, but there was still a little bit of volatility in his style, at least in my opinion, where he didn't have like an anchored presence in how he wrestled, where he had a consistency in the match, and he didn't really control where he was moving or moving his opponent. And I noticed against Cash Wilkie yesterday, he only scored 3 takedowns, but really I didn't see any opportunity for Wilkie to win the match. And so I was very impressed with Colin Moore, much more so than last year. And I would say, you know, he's clearly the guy to beat. Pretty weak weight class this year, but yes. I think Colin Moore is the guy to beat.
Yep, I agree 1,000%. And then why did freaking Iowa not send Sam Stoll out?
I think he hurt himself pretty good.
Are you sure?
In the Oklahoma State match, I think.
Okay.
And I actually got to give Iowa credit because I think he's legitimately injured. I want to say I read that somewhere, Ben.
Did they weigh him in or anything or no?
I don't know the answer to that, but I know this, that you know, there's 15,000 people there. Ohio State's up by 5. It's going to the Snyder match. You know, they could have easily have forfeited that match, and I think that Stoll's legitimately injured, and they essentially sent out a sacrificial lamb for the greater good of the sport. And I respect that, and I wanted to give Iowa some props for doing that because I do believe Stoll is legitimately injured.
Okay.
And they could have just as soon said, peace, we're out of here. And I'm going to give Iowa some credit for sending the guy out there because, I mean, they would have never heard the end of it. So I guess it was a lose-lose. But I just think that was cool, and they sent a guy out there, and Kyle did what he did with him. In front of 15,000 people, his last match at Ohio State. So I thought that was cool of Iowa to just make sure that happened.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, a couple other results I just want to mention quick before we hop off. My man Grant Lee, the University of Missouri, is ranked number 4, beat number 3 Justin Oliver of Central Michigan. That was pretty fantastic. And then Drew Matten, who we discussed earlier this year, proves he's ready for Division I wrestling, takes out Ethan Lezak in overtime.
Well, I think what's cool is if you remember, we had McFarlane on the show. We talked a little bit about Matt, and he was uncertain if he was going to pull him or not. We talked about Matt and coming from, you know, a good family, good hard work and background, and he's coming on like we see every year with some good freshmen, but he's coming on in a way where the writing wasn't on the wall last year that like, oh, Drew Madden, sign him up, man. He's going to go 38-4 and get third next year. Like some of these recruits, he was like a typical blue chip recruit, if that makes any sense at all.
No, it does.
Where you know, a lot of promise, but not setting the world on fire. They put him out there and still the most important 2 months to go. But I just see an upward trajectory out of him that I've seen before out of other guys. And I think my prediction is he's going to find his way in there on the All-American stand. I think, you know, I think he's going to be on the stand and then he's just never going to leave. You know, he's never going to leave for the next 4 years. That's just what I see out of that guy, knowing what I know about him and the program in Michigan. So it's just cool to see because I know him personally, but I'm not surprised, but I'm impressed, if that makes sense.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Okay, so this week we got the Euregan, so we find some international wrestling to talk about. And I think the other really big duel of the week is Oklahoma State versus University of Missouri. So I know I'll be watching that one closely. So I believe it's 7 p.m. I want to say on Saturday.
What are some matchups you're excited about with Missouri and Okie State?
Well, the obvious one is Ironman Heil. Heil's taken two losses. Ironman and him wrestled pretty close matches. I would like to see Willie Miklas get back to championship form because he has Preston Weigel, who's all the way up to number 3. So I think those would be the two best matches of the duel.
Yeah, no, that sounds fun to me. Regan will be good. Snyder's heading out there. They got Sajalive at the weight below, at the new weight. Any other matchups you're looking forward to? Any matchups looking forward to in Euregan?
I don't follow international wrestling enough. When it pops on, I'll watch it and I'll say, wow, that's a good match, or that's a good match. And I recognize the top names. But frankly, Tommy, because there is no real season, it makes it really hard to follow. And
no doubt.
If there was a season, if there was something functional I could follow, that would make it a lot easier for me. And I'm about as immersed in the wrestling community as it gets. So I think it's a tough thing for most people to follow.
No doubt. I'm excited for Kyle Dake to compete in the new weight. I am excited.
So he's at which weight class? He's at 79 kilo.
Yeah, and I want to see him against the Russians at that weight. I got a good feeling. What's your instinct tell you?
Well, I would say as close as he's wrestled Jordan Burroughs, who's won many world titles, he's going to have pretty darn good chance at making something happen, right? Is that fair?
Yeah, okay, Mr. Realist. Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah, he's going to do good.
But again, I don't watch enough. Like, if you ask me about a college match, Tommy, I could tell you, well, this guy's better on bottom, or this guy's got a weakness for a tilt, or this guy can't attack a high crotch, and that's why I think this other guy is going to win.
Hey, speaking about watching out for this guy,
what guy?
I was on a group text. I believe you were on it. People are saying Ben Darmstadt, Ohio boy, wrestling at Cornell, is going to make it happen, it rain this March. What's your thought on that?
He does my assassin better than anyone else that has ever done it, I think. And so that's, I love watching that move work. But yeah, he's really good. You know, this is Tommy. Did I tell this story before on this podcast?
Well, I don't know what story you're about to tell.
Well, man, I'm going to tell a story about Ben Darmstadt. Have I told a story about Ben Darmstadt or not?
Okay.
I don't want to repeat myself. So we do.
Well, tell it.
Okay, so Max and I do this Funky Fresh Camp. It's invite only. Okay.
Okay.
We only invite good kids because if you don't know what you're doing with scrambling, you're bound to get yourself in more trouble than good. Okay, because
right,
you'll try to misapply the techniques. Blah 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 blah.
Right.
And so, man, this must have been 5 years ago now, and this kid splits his eye, and It was Ben, and I had to take him to the Walgreens, and you know it was a tiny split. They ended up not doing stitches and just kind of gluing it and doing the butterflies. But I remember watching him a little more closely, the next couple days and thinking, like, this kid stinks. How did he get invited to the damn camp? Because I don't know them. I just look at their credentials or whatever.
Right.
And so, but then sure enough, within 2 years or 3 years, he's one of the best high school wrestlers around. And, you know, for me, that's stuff like that is a constant reminder. And I, you know what? I say it all the time, but I often get caught up in the trap of judging a person based on one point in time.
That's correct.
And, as opposed to like a graph. And so, you know, it was a good reminder because, listen, he might have had average credentials at that time period, but I could tell you I was watching him. He was not very good. And then it was only a short matter of time because he's super intelligent and he works hard that he became one of the best high school wrestlers in the country. And now, obviously, he's having a lot of success at the college level. But it's a good reminder for me. I always say talent exists, but sometimes, you know, you watch someone one time and you want to judge them based on that one time. And that's just too short of a time window to make judgments on people.
Yeah, no, it's I agree, man. So yeah, I'm excited for him. Hey,
are we gonna get
press passes for the NCAAs or not?
I think not.
All right, let's just wing it. We'll just podcast from the bleachers.
All right, deal. Hey, Iowa versus Michigan this weekend, so we'll have plenty to talk about next week. Anything else?
We didn't talk. Oh, maybe you did. You brought up briefly because you talked about Madden, how bad Michigan laid the wood to Minnesota.
Oh, it was ugly, wasn't it?
8-2, man.
Minnesota's not great this year, though. They got their butt whipped by Oklahoma State also.
That's still interesting.
They got a bunch of okay guys, so it could go really bad or really well for them.
Right.
Okay. Well, I'm satisfied if you're satisfied.
I'm if I'm not completely satisfied, do I get my money back?
I don't see why not.
All right. Yeah, man, I'm good to go.
All right. See you later, Tommy. Have a great night.
See you, buddy, later.
You are listening to the T. Rowe and Funky Show, and it is brought to you by Defense Soap. Defend what you've built. Tommy, I got to say, I tried these products. He shipped me a box. I love them. I've had, if you know me, you know I've had ringworm issues for a long time. So I'm looking forward to putting these in my repertoire and hoping the ringworm does not come back ever.
No doubt, Ben. And to top that off, the company was created by wrestlers. Guy Seiko wrestled at Cleveland State University. His son was an All-American at Virginia, so these people really get it. They know what the wrestling community needs.